So, Adam, thank you so much for coming to join me on this episode of Not Your Average Globetrotter. How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. And today I wanted to talk to you because you're an American, Italian-American living in Rome, and you've come here with your family and actually you're trying to make a life for yourself here. But maybe rather than my introducing you and talking too much, maybe do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are and what you do?
You know, I'm from Rhode Island originally, though I've spent most of the better part of the past 15 years living in Boston. I went to grad school at Harvard and I studied Italian studies there. That's where I met my wife, who is Spanish, and she was teaching Spanish there. So we were at Harvard working there and had kids, and we realized that we wanted, both kind of for ourselves and for our kids, an opportunity to live a Mediterranean lifestyle. We wanted our kids to be exposed to, not necessarily my wife's culture per se, but to Mediterranean culture. And, you know, we both kind of see Spanish culture and Italian culture as similar in a lot of ways. Of course, there are differences, definitely. But...
Yeah, no, there's a lot of similarities between the two. It's really quite shocking sometimes.
Yeah. And so, you know, we loved working at Harvard. Had very good jobs there. I was working as something like a dean of students in one of the undergraduate residence halls. My wife was a preceptor, which is a language teacher, essentially. And she was teaching Spanish. And we were sort of slowly looking at opportunities that were arising in the study abroad sector, which is something that I was really interested in because it sort of united these two passions I have, which are, you know, Italy and study abroad and also working with students. So I found a position, interviewed for a few positions as dean of students, associate dean of students, these type of things, at study abroad programs, and ended up accepting one at Loyola University Chicago's center here in Rome. And it was just that. It was kind of what I expected in a lot of ways, with the pandemic aside. You know, it was working with students and really exposing them to, you know, to Italian culture in a way that was, you know, really engaged. That's what I wanted to do. And so the work was wonderful. And, you know, my desire to do it, I guess, you know, jumping around a bit here, but goes back to my own study abroad experiences in college, which started with a summer in Siena, which is where I, you know, sort of fell in love with Italy, and then continued after I decided to major in Italian in college with a study abroad in Bologna. So I spent two semesters in Bologna, and they were just, you know, both of them life-changing experiences. And that's something that I wanted to be a part of giving to other students. So I guess in a nutshell, that's what got me here.
So I think maybe for people who are interested in coming to Italy, that they would be maybe interested to hear a little bit about more about your the process from actually being a student to going back to your home country and then figuring out that way of getting work here in Europe. Was there anything in particular, maybe other than having like actually studied Italian in university? Do you feel that really helped you to actually make your way to come over here? Did the study abroad, the study abroad program, did that really solidify interest from an employer, or were there any other factors in your past that allowed them to really say, "Hey, this is the right guy for the job"?
I understand what you're asking. I think it's an important question because I spent a lot of years trying to figure out how do I get back to Italy. You know, I really want to go back. And, you know, one of the things that I sometimes tell my students is that if they come here and they do this experience right, it's life-changing. But it's not just life-changing. It's the beginning of a chronic condition from which you never recover, this love for this place. And it's always going to be pulling you back, always going to be pulling you back here. And even people that, you know, I'm sure this, you've had this experience too, where people say, I've got, you know, 5 days in Italy, where should I go?
Yeah.
And my response is always like, well, you could go here, you could go there. It depends on what you're interested in. But just remember, once you go, you'll be back.
Yeah.
So no, don't stress too much about it.
Oh, no, definitely. There's no recovering from that first trip. I remember the first time that I went abroad as a kid. A family friend said to me, once you go, there's no coming back. It changes your life. It changes everything around you. And it changes the way that you look at everybody around you. Back where you were, things will be different. And it's not those people that have changed. It's you that will be the one who's changed. Because once you take that first step, and I'm not even saying to Canada, because that's... apologies to the Canadians out there, but it's practically America 2.0. Like, it's just, it's a carbon copy in some ways. I know I'm going to offend all the Canadians out there, but let's be real. We're very similar between the United States and Canada with some noticeable differences. But at the end of the day, once you actually get to maybe Central and South America or over more so to Europe, that's when everything, your whole perception of life changes.
Yeah. I think that's 100% true, and I agree that that's a change that occurs within you. It's not the people around you, but all of a sudden you're seeing them, and you're seeing your culture, and you're seeing everything in a different way, in a new light. And there's no escaping it. There's just no escaping it. It becomes part of who you are.
I'm just curious because also your wife is Spanish, so I'm assuming that this made it a little bit easier for you, or did that not end up holding any bearing with being able to get a job here?
That's a good question. I think, you know, when you make a big move like this as a family, I would say it's a challenge. Even in a culture where you feel comfortable and you speak the language as I did, you know, there is a period of culture shock that comes with that, and getting used to things and building a support network. And, you know, my son Luca got scarlet fever shortly after we moved here. I know, who thought that still existed, right? And we're like, we don't have a pediatrician yet. We don't know who to ask what pediatrician to use. You know, so it was very stressful. Yeah. Totally not a big deal, but you know, when you don't have those resources yet, it's scary, it's stressful, and it's one thing after another when you first move to another country. So I'd say it's something that you can't take lightly. But I do think I don't know that you know made me more appealing as a job candidate or us more appealing as a package, but I think it did facilitate our ability to do it, and you know, our sort of openness to having this experience with all of the challenges that come with it.
Because I'm also just, one of the reasons why I asked that is because being the spouse of a European citizen, that does give you the legal ability to actually stay here. And so was that difficult to try and organize once you got here, or did you have to start organizing all of this even before you came?
So that's an interesting question. My employer actually wanted me to get a visa, and they felt that was important. I'm not entirely sure why, but even though I had explained to them, you know, that I was eligible for work eligibility through my wife, they wanted me to have a visa for reasons that I think that were sort of bureaucratic reasons that sort of facilitated the transition for them. So that's fine. So what I ended up doing when I moved here was I came here sort of on a tourist visa, the 90-day tourist visa that Americans get, was sort of starting getting oriented in the position. And then after 90 days, I had to return to the United States and wait for my nulla osta, or entry permit, to come through from the Italian immigration office. That ended up being 5 weeks in Chicago waiting for that to happen. And
oh my goodness.
It was actually the, you know, I told you the story about the scarlet fever. That was the day before I left.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so it was really a very challenging moment, and I wouldn't care to repeat it.
Oh, my goodness.
But what happened was the sort of the opposite end of this job opportunity that I've already told you about that I accepted right. and, you know, was really loving was, of course, the pandemic. The pandemic right. shut down all the study abroad programs pretty much. And like most people, I was laid off. So I am trying to transition to the permesso di soggiorno for spouses of EU citizens. Now, I thought this was going to be super complicated to do. I couldn't get a straight answer because it's an unusual situation, right?
Right.
You know, normally you don't transition from get a work visa first and then, you know, a permesso through your spouse. And, you know, I started emailing lawyers and, you know, saying, can I do this? You know, is it difficult? I went to a CAF, a Centro Assistenza Fiscale, to see if they gave me a good answer. Everyone gave me a different answer, which I think is not atypical of the Italian experience. Nobody seems to have the definitive answer to your question here. And that's an uncertainty that you learn to live with. But what I ended up doing was going to the questura myself and saying, what do I need to do this? And they basically said, make an appointment. And I did, I came back, I made the appointment. I had every document known to humankind with me, ready for any question that could come up.
Oh gosh.
And they said, you don't need any of that. Here's a letter with a list of 5 things that you need. Come back on this day with your wife and we'll get it sorted out. So that day is the end of next month and I'm waiting for that to happen. But so far, fingers crossed, it seems like it's going to be pretty straightforward. Well, yeah. You know, I had said to them when I went to the questura, I said, you know, my you're giving me an appointment for 2 months after my permesso expires. What am I supposed to do in the meantime? And they said, well, you can apply for renewal two months before or 2 months after, so you're fine. You know, I guess I'll have to explain that if I ever get stopped by the police and they're like, why is your permesso expired? But the fact is, with the pandemic happening, everyone is aware of the fact that, you know, the wheels of bureaucracy are turning even more slowly than usual here. So I'm not too worried about it.
Wow. Well, you know what? I think I'd like to fast forward just one drop because during that time while you were working for this school, you mentioned that you did get laid off and that was just a situation that ended for you. But after that, you did something that not a lot of people really have the guts to do, or maybe because it was the situation that was just, it was finally time. But do you want to talk a little bit about your school and what you guys do?
Yeah, absolutely. This was sort of my wife's brainchild, really. You know, when we came here, it was sort of on a leap of faith because we came here for an opportunity for me, thinking, you know, something will come along for her. We'll find something that will work, that will allow her to you know, find sort of fulfilling professional path, continue her path. And, you know, the more we talked about it, the more we realized that what she is amazing at and loves and wants to do is teach. And, you know, she has a way of teaching that I think is really effective and really original. And at one point, you know, as we were talking, I kind of said, maybe, you know, you just need to start your own. Because I don't know if you're going to find an opportunity to do it your way. You know, working for somebody else. And so, you know, this was originally something that, you know, she was going to work on building, and I was kind of going to be on the periphery. And then I got laid off and we decided, you know, that we were going to both jump into this sort of whole hog and really try to make it happen. And so what we came up with was Hill School. Hill is short for hybrid language learning, so Hill with a Y. Oh. And it's a school that offers the languages that we speak and have taught, which are Italian, Spanish, and English. And we, you know, had originally thought we're gonna rent a place, we're gonna open a brick and mortar school in the traditional sense. Of course, that hasn't been possible at all.
Oh.
You know, so we've been trying to sort of roll this out really slowly, get some online clients, and that's what we've primarily been doing. So to start with.
That's really awesome. Also, just to, for anybody watching this, to clarify, this is not any paid advertisement. This is not a paid spot. Like, I genuinely wanted to bring Adam on here to talk about what he's doing, because it's really inspiring, and it's very difficult to build a business in a new country and under the circumstances that Adam had to come and do it under. I mean, it's just, I have so much respect for you and any small business owner building any kind of business or even pushing that business that they've already built, because it's a day and night grind. It's something that has to be your baby, and you have to really nurture it for all that it's, for not all that it's worth, for everything that it can be worth.
Yeah. Thank you, Rafael. I appreciate that. It's a challenge, and you know, we're gaining momentum, but we're not there yet. We picked the worst possible time to start a business. Of course, we didn't pick it at all, but it is what it is. So, and we're committed to it, you know, so we're doing our best to make it happen. And, you know, sort of coming back to what I was saying before about, you know, comfort with uncertainty, never could that be more germane than right now. And never more than in Italy, you know, where again, we're lucky that we have nice neighbors and friends, and we do have a bit of a support network after living here for a year and a half. And so we've been able to get some answers to our questions, but a lot of times the answers are not the same answers. So, you know, just trying to figure out, you know, what are the prerequisites that we need to open a school? You know, what are the legal prerequisites? How high do the ceilings need to be? Well, it depends on who you ask, and sometimes they need to be this high, but other times you can get, you know, sort of a, you can get a waiver for the ceiling height. And you know, some people said, oh, just do it in an apartment. There are tons of empty apartments where you could do it. And other people were like, don't do it in an apartment. In an apartment, you'll be breaking all these rules, and you'll have to get all these waivers. It's not worth your time. So, you know, answering these bureaucratic questions in Italy is so complicated. But I guess in some ways the pandemic has saved us from that particular quagmire, since we can't really open a school yet, although or a brick and mortar school, although we do have a place that we're looking at that I think is going to work out, fingers crossed, for when the time is right.
Well, in Bocca al Lupo, I hope it all happens the way that it's supposed to happen. And that's interesting. I mean, do you feel as though maybe looking back on things, being able to start out with an online business rather than fully invest brick and mortar is a good way of starting that type of business rather than just jumping in full hog? Or would you have preferred to be able to jump into the deep end?
You know, I don't think of us as traditionalists in most senses. But I do think there's enormous value in teaching in person. Mm-hmm. You know, at the heart of the way that we teach is engagement with the language, is use of the language. It's communicative and post-communicative. We want you to come in, and you're speaking the language that you want to learn from day one, even if you have never studied it before. That's the way that we taught at Harvard, and that's what we kind of want to bring here. That's a little bit harder to duplicate, I think, when you're doing it online, because, you know, I think the energy is different, right? You have group of people that are interacting. It's not quite the same, but I think it can be done. I think it, you know, maybe needs to be done in smaller groups than you can accomplish it, you know, if you're doing an in-person sort of thing. But, you know, I think if we had been able to open a brick and mortar school from the beginning, we probably would have wanted to do that. You know, at the same time, and, you know, I think the sort of instinct of your question is right. It's like, in some ways, like, it has allowed us to sort of roll out this thing in a way that is a little bit slower and a little bit more comfortable for us as very, very new entrepreneurs. Neither of us has opened a business before. So this is new territory for us. Even though teaching is something we're very comfortable with.
Yeah, no, that's
Does that
one thing.
Your question?
No, definitely. I mean, that's one thing that really can be amazing, that you can be so comfortable in your field, but once you start going out to do it on your own, there's all those extra bits and pieces that have to come into place, even to go and how to register for taxes here, and I mean to register that business, or do you register as a sole proprietor, or are you, and even the definition within the tax system of like, are you an e-commerce website, or what is it that you're doing? Because I mean, with yours, I can imagine there were so many definitions that you could have even gone to, and that probably, I hope you had somebody helping you with this.
Yes, yes. We have a comercialista who's actually our neighbor.
Oh, wow.
And she was kind enough to sort of walk us through a lot of the questions we have and help us open Partita IVA, which you need, of, as you know, to be a sort of a freelancer of any kind. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of questions. I mean, the tax stuff, we're still trying to figure that out. We haven't gotten there yet because this will be our first year doing our taxes in Italy. All that is part of the adventure to come, I suppose.
So I guess we'll have to check in with you at a later date to see how that's all been, because it's a wild ride. I mean, just changing from an American mindset to a European mindset is one thing, but American mindset to an Italian mindset, this is a whole extra level. Has there been anything that maybe has really stood out to you? Because you did spend time in school here, but of course there's a difference between being in that educational bubble versus actually doing it on your own. What would you say was maybe one of the biggest differences from that time to where you are now, other than having a family and kids?
From my sort of study abroad experiences, you mean?
Yeah, like what's that thing that really makes you realize, oh, I'm really living real life here in Italy. This is not just a fun study abroad experience. Maybe something that surprised you.
That's a really good question. I mean, I think it's a lot of these little bureaucratic things, I think, that, you know, make you really realize like this is real life. Like this is not an extended holiday in any way, shape or form. You know, the fact that, you know, to declare residency, I had to go to the municipio 6 or 7 times to actually make it happen. You know, of course, you're missing this paper, you're missing that other paper, you forgot to, you know, cross this T or dot that I. I was actually very lucky because I sent in, we had our residency request rejected twice. So I went in, of course, the pandemic had already begun, but I went in to the municipio and, explained this to the guy at the door because they won't let you in because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, well, you want to talk to the URP. And I said, the URP? What's the URP? Well, it's the Ufficio Relazioni Pubbliche, so the public relations office, right? So
what
I go
name.
And I talk to the, I know, right, the URP. So I go talk to this woman in the URP, and she's very, very nice. And as I'm explaining the whole thing to her, I'm overheard by the woman who processed our application. And she comes over and she said, don't worry about it, I'll talk to this guy. And like, you did it. She was like, you did such a good job. You were this close to getting it. And she was like, okay, like this is what you need to do. This is what you need to bring. You don't need to start the application over from the beginning. Just next time you come in, you bring this, you ask for me personally, and we'll get it done.
Wow.
And that's what I ended up doing. So, you know, there's some sort of some luck and serendipity there. But
yeah, sometimes in Italy, you just have to have that unique connection with that one person and not just be a piece of, I mean, that's anywhere in the world, but especially in Italy. But sorry, I interrupted you there.
No, that's right. I mean, that's actually right. I mean, there's a lot of luck there. And of course, speaking the language makes such a difference for that. I mean, in the way that you are treated. And you know, not to toot my own horn, but, you know, I've been coming here for 20 years. I speak the language really well at this point. And I think that does make a big difference to the way that I'm treated. I mean, people generally know I'm foreign, or, you know, they're like, you're not from these parts, are you? You know, like they hear something that's not quite Italian. But they can't really put their finger on it. So that makes me feel pretty good knowing that it's hard for them to kind of figure out. I don't have an American accent when I speak Italian. So,
oh, that's awesome.
I like that. But, so I think that helps. And I found people again and again will say, oh my God, the bureaucracy in Italy, it's so horrible and so difficult. Most of my experiences have been good.
Yeah.
The thing is,
at the end of the day, even though there are the annoying parts of it, if you have an understanding of how it works, then it becomes a lot less frustrating. If you approach the Italian bureaucracy from an American standpoint, then you've already lost. You have to approach the Italian bureaucratic system understanding it's the Italian bureaucratic system. And you mentioned such an important point that if you even, in your case, you speak Italian perfectly, but let's talk about my case here. I don't speak Italian perfectly, but just if you take that step of trying to show that you are serious, that you are trying to learn their language, trying to speak their language, they will actually be so much more open to you and so much more friendly. Even I had the situation where I was in a comune and at the beginning of the conversation, I said, I'm sorry, but my Italian is really bad. Do you speak any English? And she said, no, I don't speak English. So we carried out the interaction in Italian. And as we were going on, she's like, okay, I see you're really struggling in Italian. Let me switch to English. And her English was like, perfect.
Oh, that's so funny.
And that's happened to me so many times. Even when I was talking to someone on Amazon and, I don't remember if it was a live chat or if it was a phone call with the customer service, but the guy said, I asked him, do you speak any English? Just because I was getting so frustrated with trying to get the Italian out. And he said, no, this is Italy. We speak Italian. I'm like, okay, buddy. Wow. Yikes. That's pretty heavy. And whatever. The conversation went on a bit more and he was like, oh, wait, where are you from? I said, I'm from the United States. He's like, oh, in that case, we can speak English because it's your native language. I was like, what are you even? And in the end, the guy wasn't even Italian. He was originally Egyptian.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, there are those little things that will happen here that if you do try and make that attempt, people will come and meet you halfway very often, or they'll at least want to come and meet you halfway. Even if they can't linguistically, they'll try to have some patience with you. Of course, maybe it'll change if you're in a bigger city, but you're in Rome, and it sounds like you have had those experiences of people trying to help you and meet you halfway in some way or another.
Yeah, I mean, I think Romans are very warm and kind people. You know, there's... The bureaucracy in Italy is the bureaucracy in Italy, and that's the way it is. But I think if you approach it with good intentions and a good attitude and an extremely abundant helping of patience, then you can get through it. You actually reminded me of an experience I had once when I was studying abroad in Bologna. I was in, I forget where, I had a train layover. It might have been in Reggio Calabria. It was somewhere. I was on my way to Sicily. With a friend of mine from Sicily, and I was trying to get a Carta Verde, which was a discount card for young people. I don't know if it still exists or not, but for the trains. And the guy at the train station was being so rude to me, and I didn't know why. And finally, he's like, "Okay, fine, give me your passport." So because he needed ID, so I gave him my passport, and he said, "Wait, your last name is Muri or Muri, as he said." And I said, "Yeah," and he said, "My last name is Lemura. We're probably relatives." And he told me the whole history of the Mure, Lemura clans and how they were originally Sicilian, but many of them moved to Tuscany. Suddenly this guy was my best friend.
Oh, wow.
And it's funny how, you know, people in Italy want to connect. There's this desire to connect with other human beings here that I haven't experienced, or I haven't experienced in the same way in the culture that I came from. And that's something that I really, really love about Italy. And I think one of the biggest things that's kept me coming back, I'll tell you another story, actually. I've always considered myself an introvert, or at least someone who leans introvert. I need my alone time to recharge.
I'm there with you, brother.
Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
And, you know, my mom, who's a clinical social worker, is an introvert too. In fact, she's so introverted that she lives in the middle of the woods in Maine and loves it.
And that sounds like a dream.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place, and we love visiting. But she's always been interested in this sort of introvert extrovert dichotomy. And I had a conversation with her once not too long ago, and I said, "Mom, I think I have to reevaluate this idea that I'm an introvert, because I go out in the world in Italy and I look forward to interacting with people in a way that I can't say that I did in the United States."
Yeah, I honestly, I can definitely relate to that. There's just something that is unlocked here, and it's just, it's part of the culture. Even for somebody who does enjoy their time alone, there's something about life in Italy that makes you want to be outside. I mean, okay, we do live in smaller quarters than most Americans do live in, and that mm-hmm. is part of the way that people connect here. Rather than maybe like all of your friends coming to your home, you go out to the piazza, you go out to this place. And so it's not just that you're having an experience with your friends, but you're also out in the world enjoying the whole setting that's around you. It's more than just that. It's definitely a subject that I'm curious to hear more about, this idea of coming as an introvert, but then having that reevaluated and re-explained.
It's not something that I probably never going to go out and say I'm an extrovert, you know, like what I need. Yeah. But you know, there's something about going out into the world and interacting with people for an introvert that can be taxing, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's not always that way. I'm not trying to speak in absolutes here, but it's tiring. Mm-hmm. But a big piece of that, at least for me in Italy, is lifted. And I think that is really at the heart of what made me want to move here and live here permanently. I just love that. I love that that people engage with me in a way that's authentic, and people stop walking to talk to me if they know me on the street. Mm-hmm. Boston's a very frenetic city. Everyone's kind of zooming by all the time. And, you know, the people joke about this a lot, but the typical reaction when you see someone you know in Boston is to cross the street so that you don't have to talk to them. Not because you're being rude, but because you have things to do and it's cold out, so yeah. You don't want to stop.
Even if you look at it linguistically, the way that the people from that part of the country speak is very straight to the point because it's cold. It's yep, nope, not yes, no. You don't take that extra time to actually finish the word. You need to have that interaction be very pragmatic.
Exactly.
Adam, if anybody's wanting to get in contact with you or learn more about your school and also what are the languages that you teach, maybe if you can just tell us just for a quick second before we wrap up, that'd be great.
Sure. So we teach Italian, Spanish, and English. And I taught Italian for years at Harvard. My wife taught Spanish for years at Harvard. And so, those are the languages that we offer. You know, if anyone is interested in getting in touch with us, they can find us Hill School, H-Y-L-L School. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Pinterest, and you can email us at hillschool@gmail.com if you want to get in touch or contact us through social media.
Well, perfect. Thank you, Adam. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us here today. It was really great connecting with you, and I look forward to being able to connect with you again in the future and bringing you back on here to hear those updates about what you guys are being able to accomplish.
It's been my pleasure, Raphael. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And it's been so nice engaging with you in this conversation, because I feel like we're kindred spirits in this journey.
Definitely. No, we're on that same page, man. So really, thank you so much again.